National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The 2024 election has concluded, and while there are a few congressional races where votes are still being counted, the results proved decisive. President Donald Trump will be returning to the White House with a major victory over Democrat Vice President Kamala Harris. He returns to Washington with Republicans claiming control over the U.S. Senate and looking very much like they will also retain control of the House of Representatives. This week on Register Radio, we look at the election and what it means for Catholics and the country. I'm Jeanette DiMello, host of Register Radio, together with Matthew Bunsen, my co-host, and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. Matthew, what an election cycle this has been, and really, what a dramatic end to it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. This is not just a massive electoral triumph for Donald Trump over Kamala Harris, but it really is one of the great political comebacks in American history. Mm-hmm. One of the fun things of the last few days is actually being able to talk about Grover Cleveland, who was the the last person to serve two terms, but not consecutively. He was ousted and then came back. And I think in 1892 was reelected. So this is not unprecedented, but really quite remarkable. But his victory is also due to a lot of different reasons, including the economy, immigration, controversial social issues, including abortion and transgender, gender ideology. But he also won because of a pretty solid majority of Catholics who turned out to vote for him.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. And really, for our show and for our purposes, it's the question of what can Catholics expect from a second Trump term? And how did they participate in the election of Trump, right? So to talk about all of this, we're joined by Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Register senior writer Peter Laffin. And later on, we'll be joined by senior Vatican analyst for EWTN News, Frank Rocca, with a view to the Holy See and the U.S. election. So Shannon and Peter, thank you both for joining us on Register Radio.
Thanks.
Good morning, Jeanette.
So, Peter, I guess we'll start with you. You've been writing at the Register all along on this tumultuous election season and this presidential election. You've written about all the different, I guess, factors that could go in to the selection of a president. And now we're looking about this at this comeback. So how did he manage this? How did Trump manage this?
We'll be breaking down this information, for the next few months, trying to figure out exactly what happened and exactly how the votes fell the way they did. But my hunch in looking at the data is that in years from now, we're going to look back at this election and see it as the Latino realignment election. Mm. And this is especially true in the swing states, and it's especially true among Catholics. Every election cycle, the strategists, they huddle together and they ask themselves, what's the profile of the voter that we could go out and get? Who's the gettable voter that we could get that might swing our way in a major swing state that helps us secure a victory? And this time it seems overwhelmingly clear that it's Latinos and Catholics. Here's a quick stat to break this down. In Michigan, where Donald Trump secured a victory under 2 points, he won the Latino vote by 60-35. That is an incredible swing from elections past. And we have to remember, Michigan was the state in which the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, one of the most important Democrat surrogates this election, wearing a Waltz Harris hat, mocked the Eucharist. And, right. We can say that some Catholics revere the Eucharist more than others, perhaps, but everybody who's in line at Mass on Sunday and goes up and receives that Eucharist, they know exactly what Gretchen Whitmer was doing. And that impression was played thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of times on a loop in Michigan. And those voters outright rejected it.
Yeah, Shannon, we have talked in the past about the so-called Catholic vote. It has seemed at times not to have materialized, or Catholics, put it this way, seem to vote the way that everyone else does in the country. And yet, this election, based on the exit polling, and I think we're going to be seeing a lot more data coming out on this, as Peter was referencing, Catholics seem to turn out in significant numbers for Trump this time around. First, can we talk about that? But then, what were some of the issues that you think were driving this?
Yeah, they did. I mean, the exit polling Peters written about. NBC had 58 to 40, the Catholic vote going to Trump. Washington Post 56 to 41. That's a comfortable double-digit margin for Trump. You know, we talk a lot, Peter and I talked a lot in these past months about whether there even is such a thing as a Catholic vote. There's certainly not a Catholic block, right? There's not a monolithic Catholic block. But if there was, or if you believe there was, it would seem that Harris-Waltz went out of their way to alienate that block.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, just with this blind obsession with abortion without any limits, just totally off the table, no limits, no religious exemptions, no consideration of that. And then these other things that kept popping up, like Gretchen Whitmer, like the Al Smith dinner. You know, it was almost like they were intentionally trying to antagonize Catholics, who we know it's a very diverse, you know, we're a universal church. So everybody's there in this country. It's fascinating. You know, every socioeconomic demographic, except for religion, is reflected.
So are we looking at a new political law that you must attend the Al Smith dinner?
Maybe so. You certainly wouldn't want to, you know, make a point to, you know, turn your nose up at it. So, yeah, there's a fascinating piece on the Register up now by one of our commentators, Paul Kengor, who talks about the evangelical vote really waning for Trump, and that was a big concern. They've been a reliable vote for pro-life candidates. Well, Catholics made up the slack and then some. And yet, let's be honest, I do think abortion played a role with a segment of the Catholic population, undoubtedly. But I think Peter would agree with me. I think the Catholics voted largely for things that didn't pertain directly to their faith,
yeah.
Economy and immigration. And, you know, those were big issues, you know, the moral sort of woke agenda issues, you know, that was definitely played a role in there. But yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
I want to jump in for a second here. I'm going to say the title of that piece by Paul Kengor at ncregister.com. That's Donald Trump Can Thank Catholics for His Big Win. That's the commentary that Shannon just mentioned there. But Shannon, you know, you were mentioning how Kamala's campaign really at times almost seemed to be trying to annoy Catholics or just alienate them, whereas the Trump campaign did the opposite. I mean, there were many times through social media that they were reaching out to Catholics through very devotional type things like the St. Michael prayer or things of that kind. So a very different feeling between the two campaigns in terms of how they were reaching out to Catholics.
Yeah, dare one say a different vibe, because that was one of the words of this campaign.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd say, just to add one thing on the woke social issues, I think there was one thing among that slate of issues that moved the Catholic vote, moved the Latino vote, and it was what many people are describing as Donald Trump's most effective ad. And this was an ad that he played on a loop in the swing states. And it showed Kamala Harris describing how she, and this is, it was in her own words, describing how she wanted to give taxpayer-funded trans surgeries to criminals. This was in 2019, of course. Everybody was saying a lot of crazy things back then. But it was in her words, and they played it on a loop. And you have to think of the coalition that secured the victory for Trump, Latino, religious, married, working class. You have to think that ad, of all the impressions that either campaign could have made, that ad may have made a difference.
Very interesting point, because I think that issue of transgenderism is something quite new. EWTN News's coverage on that in their special election coverage, both Tuesday night, November 5th, and then during the day on November 6th. So EWTN News Nightly had specials at that time, which is available on YouTube, so anyone can go there and find it. they really highlighted the role that transgenderism and transgender ideology likely played in this election, probably for the first time. And so, Peter, you mentioned that as being something potentially different in this race. What else was different about this race, and how would you assess those differences and really Harris's performance, her campaign strategy, all that?
So many things were different about this race than any race that we'll ever see. I'd say probably the most different thing about this election to past ones is that the nominee was selected by a party establishment. Kamala Harris never received a primary vote. She also didn't receive a primary vote in 2020 when she ran, and that's because she didn't even make it to Iowa. Her campaign just wasn't strong enough. And this time around, that lack of political talent really showed, especially the longer the campaign went on. And some pundits are out there saying today that, well, Kamala did the best she had with the amount of time she had. But the truth is, the more time people saw her, the less inclined they were to vote for her. And I think that's because she just isn't, you know, some people are just made for this. This isn't a comment on her character or who she is. Some people are really good at this. But this is 2 weeks ago at a town hall at CNN. Somebody asked her, what's the first policy you'd like to pursue in office? And she couldn't answer the question. Mm-hmm. And I think people saw that. And, you know, there's no way that moments like that, where obviously this person maybe isn't ready for prime time, people saw a thing like that. There's no way that moved people to vote for her. So I think that's the biggest difference between this one and previous ones. We had a party-selected candidate who, you know, wasn't maybe up to the task. And we had Donald Trump, on the other hand, who has done this 3 times now, obviously is very good at it. If you've won 2 out of 3 presidential elections, you're probably pretty good at this. So I think there was a real gap in political talent on the top end.
And I suppose you can make the argument that Biden's departure from the race came not too late, as some have been positing, but too early, in the sense that the more that the electorate got to know her, the less enamored they were of her and her policies. But Shannon, talking about that very issue of coverage, you are a very seasoned journalist. You've been doing this for a long time. This is not exactly what we would call a golden age of journalism, is it?
No, it was shocking. It many times throughout the whole campaign, it was very shocking. I mean, let's start with Biden. I mean, his cognitive issues were covered up by the mainstream media. I mean, there's no doubt about that. They, you know, they shot down any suggestion that he was somehow ailing, you know, mentally, until they couldn't. Shocking. The assassination. This was spun as somehow Trump's fault, that he had brought it on himself. That was just so shocking. Things like the enemy within comments, the dictator, I'm going to be a dictator on day one, totally taken out of context. They ran with that. And the ABC debate, the fact-checking that was going on, you know, it was just so one-sided. In the final weeks, the narrative that somehow the Madison Square Garden event was akin to a Nazi rally, and then just the narrative that it was razor thin, right, which just kept echoing that. But I wanted to ask Peter to talk about the media in a different context, because there was he notes this big split between the new media and the old media, and how that played out in especially the last months of the campaign.
The old media, the old information complex, I think that's the way we're going to be thinking of this. You have your mainstream news, but you also have your sort of old school celebrity, musician, Hollywood movie star versus this new media establishment that coalesced around Trump. We have Elon Musk, Joe Rogan. His last second endorsement was very important. Our own Lila Rhodes, her last second endorsement of Donald Trump. This collection of people who, through the new media, through YouTube, through X, have been able to effectively combat the old media establishment. And this time, it really appears that they won. I saw Jordan Peterson describe the ragtag group of people who are behind Trump, the celebrity people that he has, Kennedy, Gabbard, folks like that. He describes them as the X-Men, and that they were fighting against the Avengers. The Avengers are very glossy. You know, think of the Marvel movies, come with a lot of cachet. But these new ragtag superheroes of the media seem to really dominate the race.
Absolutely. There's so much to explore in that. I hope we can do that in another show. In another show, we're also going to have to talk about Congress, and that's probably fitting since there are still some votes to be counted and races to still be decided there. But what I do want to close with, Shannon, if you could just very quickly run through the ballot measures that were important to Catholics and how they fared.
Yeah, the big ones were these 10 pro-abortion ballot measures. The good news there is pro-life side won three of those in Florida, Nebraska, and South Dakota. Florida was a big one. If we have time, we can get into that a little bit. But so that's good. The pro-abortion side's winning streak was snapped. A more sobering way to look at it, though, is seven of those were passed, including states like Missouri that had very robust pro-life laws. I think the other side would take a 70% batting average. So there's some very sobering dimensions to that. Over time, pro-abortion lobby, very deep-pocketed. I mean, in Florida, they outspent the opposition 10-1. And they can keep coming back year after year. And so that is, you know, there's a lot of positive things there to look at, thank goodness. But there's some longer term concerns.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we'll be looking at that as we look at what the Trump administration can do or might do in that regard, but in many other regards, too. So I thank you both for being on the show today, for the coverage that you provided. I invite our listeners to go to ncregister.com, but also to check out the print edition. Subscribe to it, please. The next edition that's coming up is November 17th. And it has all of this election coverage there in that edition. So, again, thank you to both of you.
Thank you, Jeanette. Thank you, Matthew.
You've been listening to Register Radio on EWTN, and we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're joined by Frank Rocca, EWTN News Senior Vatican Analyst, to talk about the Holy See and the U.S. elections. Stay tuned.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, host of Register Radio, together with Matthew Bunsen, EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. Donald Trump's victory has global significance, of course, and world leaders reacted quickly to his reelection. One world leader who had a few disagreements with Trump in his first term is Pope Francis. What can we anticipate for a second Trump term in Vatican-U.S. relations? Frank Rocca joins us to talk about this. Frank is senior Vatican analyst for EWTN News. Frank, it's so good to have you back.
Great to be here. Thanks, Matthew.
So, Frank, I guess the first place to start is what were the initial reactions from the Vatican to the election of Trump?
Well, the Vatican doesn't ordinarily send congratulations message until the inauguration. That's the protocol. Although there have been exceptions. In 2008, Benedict did that for Obama right away after the election. And 4 years ago, Francis called Biden right away, right after his election. But usually they wait till January, and that's the plan. The Secretary of State, Cardinal Parolin, made some comments to reporters about saying what he hoped Trump could reduce polarization and also help promote the cause of peace. And he said, but he doesn't have a magic wand. So it was a relatively friendly remark. I think if you speak off the record to people, some of the concerns remain the same that they were in the first Trump term, which is the Pope and the President-elect Trump, whatever he is, don't agree, obviously, about migration. President Trump wants to deport millions of migrants. The Pope says that's a grave sin. They don't agree on carbon emissions, and they don't agree on some other things. But on the other hand, they do have seen more eye to eye on abortion. Of course, Trump has liberalized on that a bit, so there's probably less of an agreement there. Probably Ukraine is the area where they would be most likely to agree that one that stands out.
Yeah, Frank, you pointed out the importance of Ukraine, and one of the figures that may be emerging in this upcoming administration is J.D. Vance, who has obviously served in the Marines, but he is also a Catholic convert. Can you talk a little bit from your perspective on Vance's significance in this election, but also what role he might have going forward?
In relationship with the Vatican in particular?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Of course, that's right. Neither of the two principal candidates this year was Catholic, but of course, we do have a vice president who's Catholic. That was more of an issue. There was some tension, of course, during the Biden administration between U.S. bishops and the Vatican over Biden's position on abortion. Of course, there'll be less so because, number one, Vance is not the president, and number two, his position on abortion, even if it is more liberal than the bishops and the Pope would like, is much less in favor of abortion than Biden was and the Democrats have been. It's a good question as to whether him being a Catholic will have much bearing on anything, except whether, in terms of, because of course the vice president isn't the person who directs the relationship. But I know that some progressive Catholics have already criticized Vance for his position on immigration, saying that it's out of step with Catholic social teaching. So we can expect some of that, I think.
Yeah, so, and Frank, I think your piece, I'm going to mention the title of it so people can go to ncregister.com and look it up and read it. It's very much worth the read. It says, the title is Trump's Second Term Points to Tensions, Possible Cooperation with Pope Francis. And as you mentioned, Ukraine may be a point of cooperation, but another point of cooperation could be gender ideology. Can you say why?
Well, the Pope has been very strong about criticizing what he calls the theory of gender or gender ideology, erasing what he says that erases differences between men and women. And he's even spoken informally some years ago in a press conference. He was sort of shaking his head, saying, oh, I understand in the schools they tell the kids they can be a boy or a girl and that sort of thing. So some of that sounds similar to what we hear from Trump and from the conservative Republicans in the United States. And not only, that was certainly an issue in the campaign. Trump has promised to roll back some of the Biden administration policies that were favorable to transgender transition interventions for minors. He said he was going to make it easier to sue doctors for people who then come to regret their transitions. So there's certainly some common ground there. The Pope, of course, as we know, especially on cultural issues, is not as combative. So it's a question of whether he'll endorse that, those policies or praise for Trump for those policies, I don't know. But certainly there's some overlap in the objections that a lot of people in the United States have made to transgender, especially for children, or minors.
It's going to be very interesting, the interactions. I think with the U.S. bishops, Jonathan Liddle wrote about that at ncregister.com, and I think there's going to be a lot of interesting interactions with the Vatican and U.S. bishops with the Trump administration. But what can we expect? Do you think they'll meet? Do you think Trump will meet Pope Francis again?
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. Remember that Trump in the first term made it a priority to meet Pope Francis because on his first international trip, if I'm not mistaken, he went to the Middle East and also Europe, he went out of his way to come to meet the Pope in Rome because Rome was not on the itinerary for any other reason. So he clearly valued that occasion, and so I'm sure he'll do that again. Probably in the context of another trip, a multi destination trip.
Yeah, absolutely. And after all, he has a Catholic wife. He has a Catholic vice president now. So we could probably expect he's gonna make some priorities there. And I'm guessing he's going to have some Catholics dotted throughout his administration like he did the first time. So, yeah, very, very interesting stuff. Frank, we're really interested in what you're writing on this topic, the perspective from Rome and relationships is crucially important. I think we get myopic sometimes and we need to look a little broader. And I'm grateful you brought that to us.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I know it'll be very interesting to watch the relationship. It could be, you know, I noticed that other world leaders and leaders also of industry have been even more friendly this time than they were in 2016. Trump is becoming a little bit more normal, I think.
I don't know if that's good or bad, right?
Well, but well, he's still very unique. But I think that he's more of a fact of life now. And maybe some people thought of him as kind of an aberration. And now he's, for better or worse, he's part of the, he's there. There he is. And I think it will be interesting to see if the Pope also takes that approach.
Yeah, yes.
Resignation may be the word for the next couple of months.
Yes, a resignation of a different kind.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Right, right, right.
Very, very good point. So I'm going to mention Jonathan Liddle's piece, How Trump's Win Could Impact the U.S. Bishop's Agenda. That's at ncregister.com. And, of course, Frank Rocco's piece is also available there. Remember, there's a whole bunch of news, analysis, and commentary at the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. As always, thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. And until next week, on behalf of my producer, Michael McCall, and my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, I'm Jeanette DeMello, and I pray that God bless you.